Chapter 7, El Janus. The Dragon Clan settled into a contented post-celebration malaise over the next 2 days. However, tensions began to rise by day 3. A blizzard had struck, stranding dozens of dragons who had expected to be heading home by now. Everyone was tired of leftovers, tired of each other, and in an increasingly grumpy mood. Uriel was in the kitchen complaining to Safe that she was never going to host a clan gathering ever again. She heard her granddaughter Mintaka ask, "Bubby Uriel, how can we help?" Uriel spun around to give her granddaughter a hug, but she was startled to see humans standing behind her instead of dragons. Her granddaughters and the 3 human girls to whom they had bonded sounded almost identical to her. She guessed that it was due to bonding with individuals, rather than the blended personalities and memories of dozens of prior generations. Uriel sighed and answered,
"I don't think you can help, unless you can end this blizzard, or stop the boy dragons from fighting. Dealing with the blizzard might be easier, though."
Elisa replied, "We'll see what we can do. I hope you feel better soon. I'm sure your family appreciates you opening your home to them for the holidays, and despite how it might seem now, they will leave, and your home will be quiet again." Uriel watched them leave and smiled. Safe had told her why they were bonded to her babies, and Uriel was grateful that they were there and willing to help. She was also thankful for the personalities they imbued into the newborns. Nari and Sarah were competitive troublemakers, while Mintaka was a quiet sweetheart. All were bright and loving, though, and she felt blessed to have them in her family.
"Who knows? Those kids might be able to stop the blizzard," she chuckled under her breath as she returned to straightening her kitchen.
The girls told the others about Uriel's request, and Janus came up with a solution. This was the first time he had been animated since they arrived, yet he refused to discuss why he was depressed. The next day, Janus invited Juice and his male cousins to a large room in the back of the cavern.
Juice asked,
"What's up? Hey, wasn't this the room the Southerners were using as a latrine?"
"Yeah, but Ertish and Terra transformed all that poo into nice clean dirt. And check this out," answered Janus as he cast a spell and the 3 large dragon stones suspended from the ceiling began to emit a bright yellow glow.
Juice was not impressed. The dragon was still showing off to his cousins and yawned.
"So you built a dirty room with bright lighting. Big deal. I thought you had something fun to show us."
"Juice! Those stones are emitting the same light spectrum as the sun. I've even set it to turn off at night. What would you get if you combined all that with a little water?" asked Janus in an annoyed tone.
"I don't know. A mud wrestling pit?"
"Ha ha!" snorted Juice.
"No, you'd have a place to garden inside, during the winter," screamed Minos.
Juice shook his head, embarrassed that he hadn't figured it out. He was mortified that this little kid understood what Janus had built before him.
"It's called an indoor light garden," beamed Janus. "My mom has one back on Earth. There is no rain, so you have to water it every day, but Minos is right. You can garden all year long. You can start planting right now."
"Indoor light garden? Can't we call it something else?" asked a small dragon.
"It's called a man cave," said Versera with authority.
"Dude, we have a man cave," cried Juice, and the dragons immediately began arguing about how to plant their garden.
Stavius slapped Janus on the back and noted, "It looks like you solved the fighting problem."
"Well, at least they moved the fights to the back of the cave," Narayana clarified. An argument had erupted regarding where to plant the zinnias.
"Nice work, Janus. Now, can you tell us why you've been so depressed?"
The others surrounded him and led him into their shared chamber. They formed a mini intervention and refused to let him leave until he explained what was making him sad. When Janus finally realized they meant their threat, he relented to share what had happened.
He told them about the Order of the Key, about El Janus, and about the writings and paperweights. He explained that he had read El Janus's notes after they arrived and now had a better understanding of how the talismans were supposed to be used.
"That all sounds like good news, Janus," Terra gently said. "Why are you sad?"
Janus looked at her with watery eyes and said,
I'm not sad. I'm anxious and scared. I feel like my stomach is going to burn through my skin. You see, even though I know what we are supposed to do, I'm not sure we should do it. The others had been focusing on acquiring the talismans to fulfill the prophecy. They hadn't thought much about what to do with them once they possessed the entire set. That was supposed to be Janice's job anyway. But none of them had questioned whether they should complete the prophecy. That was a command of the gods. This was supposed to restore magic to the world. At least, that is what they assumed. Janice, I know that this is your part of the prophecy, but we're all in this together. Why don't you start at the beginning and tell us what you know? Perhaps we can help, soothed Terra. I don't know if I'm supposed to, sniffled Janice.
And when did you begin following the rules? Grumbled Urtish. He had meant it as a statement of fact, but everyone chuckled.
Yeah, guilty as charged. Okay, I'll tell anyone who wants to hear what I know, and you can give me your opinion, said Janice. He was slightly surprised when they all sat down to listen, as he quickly described what he had learned. L. Janice's earth name was Lewis. He was born September 18, 1899, in the Price Hill area of Cincinnati. He arrived on Mirth on his birthday in 1912 and spent the next 6 months here alone, waiting for his heroes to show up. He traveled to Septumculus during that time to study the talismans and the castles in which they were housed. He offered this information to the others when they arrived, but they ignored him, claiming he was not a true hero. They left without him and returned a month later, proudly carrying the Jewels of Luna. They spent the next 2 days celebrating and were planning their next raid when the Septumculums arrived in the valley. L. Janice had not been invited to the celebration and was hidden in his secret chamber. He was trying to decide what to do with the necklace when the soldiers arrived. The heroes and trainers had been slaughtered by the time he emerged. Furthermore, the Septumculums had taken the talisman back to the city. The hopes of that generation of heroes fulfilling the prophecy were gone. No more heroes arrived for many years, although L. Janice kept returning to Mirth in Lewis's dreams. L. Janice decided he would help future generations of heroes by studying and interpreting the ancient texts and the current talismans.
He concluded that 1,000 or more years ago, someone named M. Mars had succeeded in acquiring and assembling all 7 talismans. M. Mars removed their ornamentation and used the remaining carved dragonstone pieces to build something which looked like a DC motor.
Are you serious? Screamed Versera. Did it work? What happened? Janice answered, Yes, it apparently did work, and M. Mars created some sort of doorway to another world. Then why wasn't the prophecy fulfilled? Why are we here? Asked Narayana. Everyone else's heads were nodding in agreement. Janice said, Well, L. Janice believed that M. Mars didn't build the doorway quite right. It somehow became unstable and eventually disappeared. He guessed that is why the prophecy wasn't fulfilled. So you're worried that we'll fail too? Is that why you're scared? Asked Elisa. No, I'm worried that we might succeed, admitted Janice. He looked up and saw that everyone expected an explanation. You see, L. Janice lived in both Earth and Mirth for his entire life, and he was not a happy man. Lewis fell in love on Earth, got married, and had children, but felt guilty every time L. Janice had a romantic encounter on Mirth. He felt as though he was cheating on his wife, even though he was in a different world. Lewis's wife died in 1953. He remarried a year later, after which L. Janice chose to live on Mirth as a hermit in a small cave in the hillside farther down the valley. He finished his notes and swore he would have nothing more to do with the prophecy or with any other people on Mirth ever again.
On February 5, 1955, Lewis read an article in the Kentucky Post which caused him to return to the Order of the Key Chamber to revise his notes. He now knew how Mirth and Earth were related, and he had a new theory about the true purpose of the prophecy.
Janice paused, looked around the room, and asked, Hey, does anyone want to take a break for lunch? Versera and Stavius had to physically restrain Narayana as she lunged at Janice. Stavius laughed. It's good to see that you're feeling like your old annoying self, but
You had better continue. I don't think we can hold her back for long.
Janice smiled. I'm just kidding, but you're right. Sharing this with you is making me feel better. Science fiction started becoming popular in the 1940s with stories about Martian invasions and alternate universes. Like us, L. Janice believed that Mirth was another version of Earth. The geography of Septumculus and Cincinnati exhibited a lot of similarities, but there were also major differences. One world has magic, while the other does not. The climates are different. Mirth's moon has forests and oceans, while Earth's is lifeless and barren. Some of the stars are different positions, and while the general terrain of Septumculus matches Cincinnati's, the river flows in a different path. This was not news to anyone in the room, and they wished Janice would get to the point. However, he ignored their muttering and slowly continued to build his story. Lewis decided to search for the cave valley on Earth in an attempt to prove that the worlds are connected. He was a salesman for a lumber company and frequently traveled throughout eastern Kentucky on business trips. Lewis extended many of these trips with excursions searching for the cave, and in 1949, he found it. The cave where the Soul Reapers live is called Great Saltpeter Cave and is located in Rockcastle County, Kentucky. The crowd gasped, and there were a few murmurs of, I knew it! Narayana glared at him and demanded, What does this have to do with a newspaper article, and what do you find so scary? Janice held up his hands and said, Okay, no need to threaten me, I'm almost done. Finding the cave seemed to prove to Lewis that Mirth was another version of Earth. There were similarities and differences, but one thing was consistent. Nothing man-made matched between the two worlds. The roads and buildings in the two cities were all completely different. This proved to him that Earth and Mirth had evolved differently due to one having magic and the other not. However, that morning's newspaper article changed everything.
As you know, the primary route north to Clofton and Septumculus is a wide, reasonably flat, rocky swath through the hills. Perhaps this valley was carved by some ancient river or glacier on Mirth, but Lewis's Earth did not have such a path. The roads he traveled in northern Kentucky were all winding highways weaving in and around steep hills. The article he read that fateful morning described a proposal to build I-75 from Florence through Covington. This was a massive federal project to excavate many of the hills and replace narrow, winding roads with a high-speed, limited-access expressway. Lewis realized at that moment that Mirth's rocky riverbed wasn't a riverbed at all. It was the ancient remains of I-75. Mirth isn't an alternative Earth. It is our Earth, far enough in the future for everything man-made to have disappeared, except for where people transformed the topology of the Earth itself.
Everyone was silent for several minutes while they tried to comprehend what Janice was saying. Ertish was the first to speak. He said, So we're in the future? Tara said, If L. Janice is right, then we must be over 10,000 years in the future, because that is how long it would take for something like the Ohio River to change course. Janice added, And for stars to shift. I remember Stavius pointing out that Orion's bow was wobbly on Mirth, but smoothly curved on Earth. I'm guessing that those particular stars have moved over 10,000 or 100,000 years. But why does Mirth have magic? Where did it come from? Asked Elisa. Janice sighed and answered, Well, that's the scary part. L. Janice believes that someone already fulfilled the prophecy.
Wait, that doesn't make any sense, complained Narayana. Who would have fulfilled the prophecy and when would they have done it?
Someone from Earth's future and Mirth's past, answered Tara. She paused to think and then continued, If L. Janice is right, then the prophecy's objective is not to restore magic to Mirth, but to bring magic to Earth. It hasn't happened yet on Earth, but some group of heroes who lived on Earth after us must have successfully fulfilled the prophecy. Versera interrupted, Or perhaps we are the ones to fulfill the prophecy, we just haven't done it yet. Narayana groaned, All this time travel logic is making my brain hurt. It's like Club S&M. Elisa asked, But where does this magic come from to begin with? It just doesn't make sense. Janice said, I agree, but
Lewis was a rather religious man and postulated that magic is a gift from God. He was convinced that God is sending us a message with the gift of magic from the distant future. He believed that the heroes must follow God's teaching and bring magic to Earth to uplift humanity. Stavius said, "That sort of aligns with the cycles I found on Earth. Maybe other people have been trying to decode the message for thousands of years, but why is this so scary? I mean, think about it. We'll bring magic to Earth if we succeed, and we'll be the resident experts on how to use it. How cool is that?" Narayana agreed. "What's the problem, Janice? This sounds like a good thing. Why do you and Mr. Ertish look like you're going to puke? It all sounds awesome to me." Ertish started to speak, but Janice cut him off. Lewis was too young to serve in World War I, but he witnessed it. He saw many soldiers return home with missing limbs and other traumatic battle injuries, and he knew many families who had lost members in the fight. He was too old to serve in World War II, but again, he saw the horrors of a global war. This time he witnessed the added effect of advanced technology like tanks, jets, and the atomic bomb, and by the mid-50s, he was seeing the arms buildup of the Cold War. He was afraid that humankind was not ready to handle the power of magic. He was terrified that magic would be used to destroy the world rather than to save it. And I think he might have been right. It appears that a group of heroes did manage to bring magic to Earth sometime in our future, but perhaps they live in a saner time where people didn't use it to destroy the world. "Or maybe not," Ertish softly added. "If this really is future Earth, then where are all the people? Most of Mirth appears to be wilderness with only a few scattered towns and small cities. Perhaps we are the ones who bring magic to the world, and this is all that is left." A woman said, "That's a pretty good story, and maybe you're right, but do you really want to defy the words of the gods? I mean, sure, one possibility is that Janus destroys the Earth by bringing magic to it, and the gods step in and resurrect it. Or perhaps you aren't the ones who created Mirth by fulfilling the prophecy. Maybe that was done by some future heroes when the world was already collapsing. Maybe your job is to save the Earth by bringing magic back earlier in time before people managed to destroy it. Or maybe there really are multiple versions of Earth, and your job is to spread magic to the next one in line." Ertish started to explain why that didn't make sense when he realized he didn't recognize the woman's voice. Shock washed over his face, and everyone turned to see a tall, young, Asian woman standing in the corner. She smiled and said, "Hi, my name's Tara.